Good morning. It's 9:30 on Coast Community Radio, and that means it's time for The Conversation. And support for The Conversation comes in part from Blue Scorcher Bakery and Cafe, baking up community one loaf at a time at 15th and Duane in Astoria. Open daily, 7 to 3 with breakfast and lunch, light dinner, pastries, and coffee, 3 to 6. Info at bluescorcher.coop. Well, good morning. This is Graham Nystrom. I'm your host of The Conversation today, and I have three in-studio guests, and I will introduce them in a moment. But this month, if you didn't already know, is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And so for that reason, we are having a conversation about domestic violence. And joining me in the studio are Terry Steenbergen, Mindy Stokes, and Melissa Hennigy. Terry Steenberger is, is the executive director of The Harbor. And Mindy is a former board member, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Melissa, what's your role?
Health and Care Partnership Coordinator.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you in the studio and on The Conversation today. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
So the number is 503-325-0010. We're going to get the ball rolling with a little conversation within the studio here, but at any point, you're welcome to give us a call with your input, your comments, your questions, your experiences. This show is about domestic violence. It's about awareness. It's about resources available to you. And so I thought I would let Terry start with just a little overview of Domestic Violence Awareness Month and why we are all here today talking about it. Terry?
Great. Yeah. Thanks for having us again. So Domestic Violence Awareness Month came out of the Day of Unity, which was held in October of 1981, which was a day to bring together those who work in domestic violence work and have a conversation about domestic violence and what it means. And they discovered that there really wasn't enough time to cover everything they needed to cover in just one day. So it became a month. And so Domestic Violence Awareness Month is really to bring people together who do the important work working with survivors. It's also a month to just create awareness around domestic violence, mourn those who have died, unfortunately, from domestic violence, and also really celebrate those who've actually survived those experiences.
Well, thank you for bringing us together to talk about this today. Mindy, do you want to chime in with some thoughts about domestic violence?
Sure, and thanks for having me. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
So I'm very familiar with domestic violence. the reason I work in the field and really concentrate on education around domestic violence is that when I was 3 years old, my mother was surviving the abuse of my biological father, and he was very violent. And one night, he attempted to murder her in front of her children. And I was three and a half, and I was awake, so I witnessed it. And he continued to batter her until he tried to shoot her. And when he realized he didn't have any bullets in the gun, he went to get bullets and she ran for her life. And then he took my brother and I for 3 days. And understand, not only did he just commit this crime, but he was completely drunk too. So he's drinking and driving with his kids in a fit of rage. She calls the police. They responded. They come. They see that she's been battered. And they say, well, he's your husband. We're not going to do anything. She said, he's heading north. He's taken my kids. They did not follow him. They didn't attempt to find him. And he had us. I was 3 and a half. My brother was 6 months. He came back 3 days later. My mom was able to orchestrate leaving. And let me back up. Before she left, she then went to a judge. This was in Modesto, California. And she requested a restraining order. And she had the evidence. She had pictures of her battered body. She had a lawyer. And the judge said he declined the request. And he said, I'm tired of women coming here asking for restraining orders against their husbands. So she did not have any protection from the criminal justice system, from the police. And so she continued taking care of her family, so she was able to leave eventually. And so what that does for me as an adult is that it's really informed how I see how systems can have power over people's lives and harm them or do good. And so not only did he batter her that night, the systems did too. And so that's why I'm committed to the work that I do, because even though we here in this room may continue to work to end domestic violence and help survivors, if the laws don't change, we can only do so much.
So I'm going to jump in here and say that Terry was on an episode of Perspectives with host Joan Herman, and that podcast is also available on our website, coastradio.org. And we're hoping to continue the conversation today, and we do invite you to be a part of it. So the number here is 503-325-0010. Melissa?
Well, what I have is a life experience from one of our community members that I wanted to share she experienced. So this is the first time I tried to leave my abuser was 9 months into our relationship. Things had been escalating, and I felt like I was walking on eggshells all the time because I was scared of making him mad. Yelling, name-calling, and jealousy were affecting my day-to-day life, and I was drinking a lot to cope. One evening, I went out to dinner with a friend to catch up and saw my abuser driving around looking for me to make sure I was where I said I was. I gathered my courage, and when I got home, I told him it was over. I was shaking, not knowing how he was going to respond. He walked out of the house without a word, tears running down his face. I got a call from the hospital a couple hours later. He had walked in saying he was going to kill himself and that it was my fault. The mental health worker asked me how things were at home, and I cried, saying I was trying to break up with him and I didn't feel safe. They released him that night and gave me the advice to hide his guns and knives. I heard about the harbor at a fundraising event, and I decided to reach out to them because I didn't know what to do. Things were getting worse at home, but I was afraid he would kill himself or me if I tried leaving again. The harbor advocates listened and helped me make a plan to stay safe until I was ready to leave. They didn't pressure me to make a decision and said they would help me get out when I was ready. I made the choice to leave several months later. My abuser was talking about proposing when I said I didn't want to be with him anymore. He went into a rage, yelling, throwing things, slamming doors. I heard him run upstairs and open the gun closet, open the case, and begin to walk downstairs. I grabbed my dogs and ran out the door. Even though it was after business hours, the harbor advocates met with me and helped me get a safe place. They helped me pick up the pieces of my life over the next couple of months, providing me with emotional support and helping me to understand that it wasn't my fault. I'm grateful to the harbor for listening to me, believing me, and supporting me, even when I wasn't ready to leave.
That's a powerful story. When we were talking before the show started, one of the questions that I had was how to address an issue where there isn't a line that gets crossed, where all of a sudden a relationship goes from not abusive to abusive, that it's this wide gray area. And I think that maybe, Mindy, you had some perspective on that, about how important it is at those just earliest stages to assess your dignity and your right to not be abused in any way. And maybe you can also touch on that the type of abuse that we're talking about is not just physical. It can be many other more subtle or even less subtle forms.
Yeah, so let me think here for a second. So Graham asked us what happens. When is the line when a relationship becomes abusive, and when do you act? And my response to that was and is that abusers know exactly what they're doing. They're very crafty. And so they create an environment where they plan to maintain power and control. And any tactic will be used to maintain that power and control. And so it could be that in a brand new relationship, nothing is really off for some time. And that's intentional. The abuser always knows what they're doing. And so it's really important that people understand that I don't view domestic violence as two people, you know, they're together, they have a relationship where there's equity, neither are afraid of each other, but they have a fight one night, and maybe words are said, or maybe one person pushes the other or something. It's not, but that's not how the relationship is. Okay, there may have been an incident where there was misbehavior, but domestic violence is much bigger than that. It's tactics that are used. It's planned. It's crafted. It's a pattern of behavior that we see. And I know that Terry's going to speak to the psychological nature of abuse. And that's one thing I want to say real quickly, too, is that it's very difficult as a survivor of abuse to figure out what's going on when the person who's abusing you tells you that they love you. It does such a number on your psyche. And that, too, is done on purpose.
Yeah, you mentioned how difficult it is to identify it when it's a personal relationship versus like a work relationship, where maybe when your boss is being abusive, it's immediately apparent to you, and you know that you have rights and that you can take action. But when you have developed over a long period of time a trusting relationship, and then things start to change, and you don't even want to believe that that's true, maybe as well, because you are in what you thought was a loving relationship.
Right. And if you ask for clarity, you're just going to be told, oh, it's all in your head. Oh, you're overanalyzing. You're emotional. You are psychotic. Because there isn't any honesty. You can't trust this person to tell you the truth.
Yeah. And I think one of the other things to what you were saying, or to go on with what you were saying, is broadening that definition of domestic violence, right? It is the physical violence, and it is it's the emotional violence, it's the economic abuse, it's the isolation. So broadening that definition too, as a survivor, somebody who's in these situations too, of understanding that you're not crazy, that, there's other forms that are what make up domestic violence.
So the three of you that are in here are involved with services for people who are looking to escape an abusive relationship. But I think we also planned to talk about what is wrong at a systemic level, and what creates the people who do feel that need for control, or to be in the abuser in an abusive relationship. And, you know, putting the responsibility where it should be. And so I think part of why we're all here talking about this today is to create an awareness that there is a problem, and that it needs to get addressed at the root, you know, as much as we also need to provide services out at the fringes of, you know, what starts in a very different place, that creates the problem in the first place. Terry, did you have something that you were going to add to?
I think just in talking about who are those that abuse, or what happens to make somebody need this power and control? And I think that's it's a difficult question to answer. And I think one thing that people should know is that domestic violence, intimate partner violence, happens across the board. It's not just in poor families or immigrant families or middle class families. You know, it's across the board, and we see it everywhere. And it comes, you know, where does it come from? I think, you know, we have systems of oppression in the United States, in the world, that tell certain people that they are more important or they are more powerful than other people. And I think that works in a couple different ways on people. It brings people who are in power or have enormous amounts of power to a place where they think that they can just have power and control over anybody and anybody that's in their lives. And it also tells people who maybe don't have power that they should, and so need to figure out how to exert that power over somebody. And so I think there's a ton of dynamics going on, and it's hard, you know, it's hard to really pinpoint sort of what the psychological makeup of an abuser is, or like what's really going on in folks' head. But just, you know, starting from a systemic place, it's like we have these systems of oppression that encourage that kind of behavior. And so we have a lot of work to do to fight that system in order to really solve the problem as well.
Now, was it true that just because you were a victim of abuse doesn't necessarily make you an abuser, right? There's maybe some misunderstanding about the connection there. Did we talk about that?
Yes. So statistics show that the minority of children who witness abuse as the minority of adults who witness abuse as children go on to become abusers. So again, you know, people abuse because it works. It works. You get your way. You get to have all the power. It's a great way to get your way. And when we're thinking of systems and how they inform interpersonal violence, you have to look at historically who has held power in this country and around the world. We live in patriarchies, and we live in a society that is male-dominated, male-centered, and male-identified. And so historically, since men have held the power, if there aren't systems in place that seek to disrupt that power and make sure that we all have power, then there's a system that's set up that's already abusive and gives all of the control to one set of people, one set of the community. Now, not all abusers are male. That is not true. And we look at systems of power and privilege and power and control. But many, many victims, many, many survivors of domestic violence are female. That's what the statistics bear out, and they have for generations.
If you're just joining us on the radio, this is Coast Community Radio. This is The Conversation, and joining me in the studio are Terry Steenberg and the executive director of The Harbor, Mindy Stokes and Melissa Hennigy. And the conversation today is about domestic violence, and it's about awareness, and it's about knowing where resources are. And so maybe we can spend just a couple minutes talking about resources and how to access them. And, you know, maybe even beyond just The Harbor, I know that Long Beach has a crisis response center. And just reaffirming for folks that there are resources for you.
Yeah. Yes, there are definitely resources for people out there. And with The Harbor, it's of all genders as well. And the resources that we have... when people come in, we do safety planning. We have a confidential shelter location. We do emotional support. We also do restraining orders. We help with finding legal counsel and resources for that. We really connect with other community members and social service networks. We connect with our hospitals. I kind of see us as also like we fill in the gaps in these systems, because navigating the systems while going through this is very difficult. And so when somebody can come to The Harbor or in other domestic violence and sexual assault advocacy centers around the nation, it's really helping somebody go through these systems that are pretty difficult. But they're all over the United States. I'm kind of drawing a blank, actually, some of the names up in Long Beach. I know in Tillamook they've got Tides of Change. There's plenty in Portland, St. Helens. They've got another sexual assault and advocacy center.
Yeah, and I think the important thing is to just know that you're never wrong to call, and you're never wrong to seek the advice or the assistance or the protection of those resources offer.
Of course, yeah.
503-325-0010. We'd like to put you on the air if you have a story to share. I think that this is a good opportunity for folks to learn from other people's personal experience. Experience is a great teacher, and you can help provide some of that insight to the others in the listening audience. So do give us a call if you'd like to join the conversation. I am a white male, and so I have no, you know, I try not to, I think I'm fortunate to be an optimist because of that. I think I'm lucky that I'm an optimist, and I think that everyone has dignity and deserves dignity. And power has never been something that I've personally craved, and that makes me lucky as well, I think. And so when you're asking that question of, is it time to call, think of your dignity. and that you have it and that you deserve it and that no one has the right to take that away from you. Again, 503-325-0010. We do have our first caller. Hi, you're on the air. What's your comment or question?
Hi, this is Victoria down in the Halem. In 1988, I worked with Margaret Frimmett, who now has an executive position with a college, and she was the founder of what's referred to as the VOCA camp for sexually abused kids. And to be involved in the camp at all, you need to go through a training, which the Harbor provides at the college, and it's pretty intense in terms of, you know, one night a week for 6 weeks, something like that. But there, the comment that domestic violence, you know, can occur in any class or, you know, social class or whatever, is certainly accurate. But there are some markers. People who believe in or are raised in very authoritarian systems have a higher tendency to engage in domestic violence because those authoritarian systems, whether it's religion or the military, says, I'm in charge, you're not. And it's been really noticeable if you start looking at the backstory on some of the issues around domestic violence, you'll see that very often the perpetrator comes from an upbringing where they've been told that authority figures rule all and there isn't any kind of democratic process going on in a household. And my experience working with people who are work-study positions, I had a couple of work-study students when I was working for Tillamook Bay Community College, you know, one after the other. And in both cases, they were women who were fleeing a domestic violence situation, which would start out with shaming, restricting their access to friends and family members, and then it would escalate from there into, you know, physical things. So there's lots to learn about this. I think Margaret would be an excellent resource to talk with. And, you know, she got a statewide award for starting something which everybody was sort of hesitant to support in the beginning, but now has become quite a vital institution for Clatsop County. So that's my comment. Take it easy, y'all.
Thanks,
Good
Victoria.
To talk about this.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you, Victoria, for that call. 503-325-0010 if you would like to join the conversation here on Coast Community Radio.
I would just like to thanks, Victoria, for calling in. I think you made some really great points. Margaret is actually also really great, and VOCA Camp does a lot of really great work with kids in Clatsop County. I just wanted to go back to talking about a little bit of the sort of dynamics of power control and how that is a pattern that happens in a relationship. And as Victoria was pointing out, there a couple of women that she spoke of there was this, they experienced isolation from their family and friends. They had a social isolation, maybe probably physical isolation also. Maybe they were living in a house kind of up on the hill or something. That doesn't necessarily have to be the case, but that is common also. And I think that's one of the places where it starts, of just like being taken away from your family so you no longer have that support network. And I think that's one of the reasons why places like the Harbor or other agencies around the country are so important, is that a lot of times people who are experiencing domestic violence often don't have that support network anymore in place, or because they have become more isolated from their family, they then feel ashamed to reach out to them again because there's been this distance. And so it can be really helpful to just have somebody to call who hasn't, you know, been part of that cycle yet. And then just bringing it back also to the fact that intimate partner violence, people are supposed to be safe in their homes. You know, that's the place where we go to get away from the world. And so it is sometimes hard to believe that it's not a safe place. And then being in that place that's not safe when it's supposed to be is really hard on the psyche and the body and on everything, which, you know, obviously adds to that. And I think one thing that a lot of people don't necessarily realize is that domestic violence shows up in so many different ways. It's not just physical violence. It is possible that physical violence will actually never happen in a relationship at all. But that psychological violence, or the constant, like having somebody constantly yelling at you or belittling you, telling you you're not worthy, or trying to make you feel like you're crazy, has huge impacts on your psychological health, your emotional health, and your physical health. I mean, we see women who have higher rates of heart disease and other, you know, ailments from this psychological violence. So it is more than just this sort of like physical show of power. It isn't always an option to necessarily leave either. And so I think there's a lot of stuff going on, and we find that also relationships will get more violent near that point where somebody decides that they are done and want to get out. And that's where sort of the physical and scary violence starts.
So I'll jump in here. There'll be no quiet space in my space. I like to always talk about how there is hope and how there are so many people in this community that are here to listen and to help you figure out what's going on and to get you to the right resources that you need so that you can live in a safe place. And not only physically safe, but without someone undermining you constantly and creating psychological warfare against you. and so do know that, you know, if you are a survivor or you love someone who's a survivor, you have this amazing resiliency and a lived experience that can inform your life from now on and give you a bigger picture so that you're no longer confused when you see people behaving in certain ways, and it can help you help others. So for instance, like I said earlier, my mom's experience has led me to the place where I am today, and I'm very crystal clear about this stuff. I am not confused by it. And so I offer my clarity to my students all the time who are in it and confused by it and feeling ashamed and not knowing what to do and thinking that they're crazy. And so my clarity, that's what I offer. And it's such a gift. I feel so privileged to be able to do that, even though my experience was absolutely horrible and traumatic, and I don't wish for it, and I'm not grateful for it. But what I have done is I've used it to make my life better and to try to make other people's lives better.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mindy, thank you so much for actually all that you have done and do. It's you're really important to the community. I think also. Actually, I've just lost my thought. I don't know. Continue on, somebody.
Can I?
Yeah, please.
Can I jump in? No silent spaces.
Yeah.
Mindy, thank you for your clarity and your work. I think that from my personal experience, someone that I know recently was not a victim of abuse and abusiveness in a relationship, but it was somebody who was unknown to them that was displaying behaviors that are known as stalking. And the one of the most concerning parts of this for me was that when she did ask for help, it wasn't immediately met at the level of seriousness that it should have been met at. And so the piece that I was going to end with is that our radio station is a broadcasting place. You know, this is a one point that reaches many people. But maybe the people that need to be listening right now aren't listening. And so if you're one of those people listening, what I hope that you'll do is become a broadcaster yourself, where you'll become an advocate and you'll speak to the people who need to know the information that we've been talking about today. And also using your vote and changing the system and the people that are in it so that when something happens, appropriate action is taken immediately. And it is given the level of seriousness that it deserves.
Thanks, Graham. I think that's really important. I only wanted to add that we are available 24 hours a day at the Harbor, regardless of what the, I mean, somebody will answer the phone and talk to you. You don't have to be in immediate crisis at the time. If it's, you know, noon or 1 a.m., please give us a call. And that number is 503-325-5735. And again, people can call that 24 hours a day, any day of the year, and we're always available and a completely confidential service. And so anything that you tell any one of our advocates will stay with that advocate.
Well, this is amazing and important work that you do, and I thank you for doing it. And I thank you also for reaching out to us to make us part of this conversation and to use your community radio station for what it was built for. You know, I came to this station almost 35 years after it was built, and so I'm continually thankful to the people that put the work into making this resource available, and then likewise the resources that you provide. So, you know, there is good in this world and there is hope, and I just thank you very much for being here on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. I hope you'll stay tuned. Coming up next is Headline News, followed by Friday Folk with your host, Albert Smith. This has been The Conversation, where we have been, can I say, celebrating Domestic Violence Awareness Month. I know that, you know, I was told you don't tell a veteran Happy Veterans Day because there's nothing really very happy about having experienced war, and there's certainly nothing happy about domestic violence. But I think that we can celebrate your work and the successes that you can create in people's lives.
And, the successes that people have created for themselves as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you again. This has been The Conversation on Coast Community Radio.